The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White with a conference sore throat, and this is Conference Daily, the penultimate edition of this conference season, as the Tories gathered again in the ICC in Birmingham this morning. The fallout from yesterday's welfare announcements has reminded everyone just how painful the coming cuts, comprehensive spending review on October 20th, is going to be. The Make Work Pay theme, developed by Work and Pension Secretary Ian Duncan-Smith, got another airing this afternoon. George Osborne piled in cuts in child benefit for core Tory supporters yesterday. But the slashed budgets in Whitehall provided the backdrop to today's tough talking on public services, and the need to keep costs down has forced the Tory Justice Secretary, battered but unbloodied Ken Clark, to rethink the prison system. Here he is.
We will pay for fewer crimes. We will pay for fewer victims. We can challenge the independent sector, charities, voluntary bodies, the public sector, and the public services in combination or separately with all many of the very, very committed people who want to engage in penal reform or rehabilitation of those in crime. You develop schemes that do cut reoffending, either for those leaving prison or in the community, and we'll pay you to do it. We'll look at all bids from serious groups who want to take whatever approach they believe in. It can be from boot camps to therapeutic communities, so far as I personally am concerned, if they're obviously professional, dedicated people who know what they're doing. But the contracts will ensure that the taxpayer will pay for what works.
Ken Clark on pragmatic form there. He told the representatives, they're never delegates at a Tory conference, that he will be encouraging jails to work with the private sector in order to get prisoners working in 9-to-5 jobs during their sentences. But Clark was also keen to stress that he's not going soft.
This is radical reform, but don't worry, I haven't suddenly become in my old age some woolly-minded idealist since I was last, I think, rather a tough reforming minister. I am under no illusions about the British criminal class, cheery though some of them are. And I understand what the problem is with so-called community sentences. The public don't think they're tough enough. Judges and magistrates aren't confident that they're tough enough. I can share with you my own view. I've never thought that most of them were tough enough to serve both the punitive and the reformative purpose. The answer to that can't be to give up. It must be to make community sentences as tough, respected, and effective as they are in countries like France and Germany.
Never struck me as particularly woolly. But prisoners will be required to complete a 40-hour working week for a minimum wage. How did that sound to the representatives? And is law and order still a topic which arouses passion and raises blood pressure among conservative activists?
I was quite pleased with what Ken Clark was saying, particularly as the press had been suggesting he was getting weak on it. There's no such sort of that, but he is changing it, I think, to more effectiveness. And I think the reoffending rate shows that what we have been doing has not been very successful. So I was very pleased. There have been some silly community sentences.
Example of silly.
I know a chap who was putting paving stones back in a pavement, and he really wasn't capable of doing it. So I think...
So we could break our ankles, us old folk, couldn't we? Amateur paving laying.
So, I mean, there can be a lot of improvement in what is actually done for that, but the actual principle of doing that instead of jail, I think, is sensible.
I think, I agree with them that certainly violent criminals need to be locked up, need to be taken off the streets, but where community service orders are appropriate in certain crimes, and I think the main emphasis has got to be in prisons and rehabilitation. There's too much enforced idleness in prisons, and I think we've actually got to concentrate on rehabilitation to stop the spiral of crime.
I think shorter sentences are not a particularly good idea, not for offenders who are on Well, they won't be. If they're on murder charges, they're not going to be on a short sentence. Yeah. But actually, in fact, I work in a prison, and I do fine cell work. Yes. Have you heard of fine cell work?
Explain to people what that means.
It's a charity which is run, head office is in London, and we go in and teach the prisoners embroidery, tapestry work.
It's women's prison.
Men are better at it.
Our best see, gender stereotyping
is
by me.
Wandsworth.
Sorry.
Wandsworth is the best prison for it, and they've done beautiful work. They get paid for it, you know, a minimum amount, I have to say, not a lot, but they get paid and their work is sold.
Well, with your insight, what conclusions do you do are the best means of getting people not to repeat offend on the basis of your experience and what you've seen?
Very difficult, because in my particular prison, we have a lot of foreign prisoners there. Now, of course, they go back to Nigeria, Vietnam. We've just, two of my best stitchers have gone back to Vietnam. Sorry to lose them, but we have said to them, don't come back again, you know. But obviously, they're
we don't
going,
want them to come
no,
back, do we?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely.
We'd prefer to lose their stitching.
Well, this is it. You're quite right, absolutely. You know, so very difficult to know. I can quite understand why they do, a lot of prisoners obviously re-offend, because that's the only lifestyle that they know. But they need educating in prison.
He was very illuminating. He came over very well.
Have you always been a Ken Clark fan? Because not everybody at the conference has been, and he was rejected twice as party leader. Or are you a late convert to Ken?
No, I've always liked Ken.
Now that he's 70.
I've always liked Ken.
Well, there we are. Thank you very much. So, there it is. Nobody there keen to bring back the rope, though we did try to find them. In fact, outwardly at least, this seems to be a party finally determined to put those hanging and flogging days behind them. A shift made all the easier by MPs from the new intake, like Alex Shelbourne, who's now the incumbent in Elmet and Rothwell.
I thought the speech actually showed both sides to what we're trying to achieve in government. It showed the side of, towards the end, he was talking about tackling the national deficit, doing it in the national interest, being with the Liberal Democrats. But he also talked about what you could describe as the different Conservative Party 20 years ago, where it's very much about trying to not just bang people up, lock them up and have the harsh policy, but put the carrots in place. We're talking about how we need to stop reoffending by bringing in education, by, you know, 50% of people in prison being illiterate and innumerate, and being able to train them, educate them, and hopefully reduce the numbers actually going to prison.
Now, we've only just met, so I don't know where you stand on the political spectrum. Would you describe yourself as being on the left or the right of the party when you've just said that you like the sound of what Ken Clark says, so I'm not going to risk labelling you? What should I do?
I think you should describe me as a modern pragmatic conservative.
Okay, that's a good answer. What do you think about the hall during that difficult middle passage of his speech? You know, people are a bit wary of it. He's never been a conference favourite, Ken Clark. They rejected him twice for party leader, and yet he's an old pro, and he, you know, brings them to their feet at the end.
I think actually you've made the point yourself there, is that Ken's never had the warmest of affections by the party in some of his attitudes being on the
and
left of the party.
Too, yeah.
But one thing I think the party always recognised about Ken is that he's an exceptionally talented and able politician who, you know, as Chancellor, got his golden economic legacy, as Home Secretary, started to bring reform into the prison service, moved forward when he was Education Secretary. Yeah. You know, he's got a wide range. I mean, I was born in 1976, and Ken had been an MP for 6 years by that point.
The conference hasn't been without some disagreement, not least because The Guardian imported a bit in the shape of burly former Home Secretary Charles Clarke to be one of the speakers at the annual fringe debate. This year, the theme at all the conferences has been life after the coalition, is politics change forever? No full agreement on that either, but Clarke was the man who was saying the iron law of politics will reassert themselves and that the government's plans on law and order and many other policies will soon backfire. Listen to him.
The title of this event is Never the Same Again? And I would advise against the belief that you somehow, the new coalition, has somehow escaped some of the iron laws of politics. And the same again aspects that I want to address this evening are firstly the issue of competence and how you actually run the country, which I think has an important political connotation, and secondly, disguising what's really happening and what's going on. Where I think there are early signs, and I don't expect to be popular in this audience for saying it, that the coalition hasn't really got hold of some of the key problems about how you govern and how you run the country. Starting with Home Affairs, the Home Secretary Theresa May said on the World at One this weekend, that her primary goal was to reduce crime. And, of course, I applaud that. That's been the history both under the Labour government but also since Michael Howard became Home Secretary in the previous Conservative government. But all the measures that are actually being talked about, I think, will have the effect of increasing crime. I think reducing the number of police officers and weakening neighbourhood policing and police and community support officers will weaken that. I think the attack on all the information intelligence systems, weakening the DNA database, abolishing the ID cards, will weaken that. I think the idea of elected commissioners for policing throughout the country is an absolutely mad idea, and most Conservatives I know in the policing world share that view and will create strategic confusion and difficulty, to put it at its mildest. Whereas on the terrorism side, the decision to weaken the regime on control orders and so on, justified by the civil liberties type of arguments which have just been made, I think is really dangerous, as we can see in the current circumstances. In fact, Michael, I'd say my prediction is that after more than a decade of crime going down, crime will start going up again under this government as a direct result of the measures being taken. And that is a core issue of competence.
Back in the main hall, Theresa May, new Home Secretary, very conscious that she was performing close to Ken Clark, inviting comparisons, not necessarily to her advantage, told the conference that modern-day policing has become too bureaucratic, itself ripe for reform.
We also need to bring some sanity to the alphabet soup of police powers Labour invented. Week after week, they announced initiative after initiative to deal with antisocial behaviour. The result was lots of headlines, but a sanctions regime so cluttered and complicated, it doesn't just confuse the perpetrators and victims, but police officers themselves. There are ISOs, ABCs, ASBIs, ASBOs, CRASBOs, crack house closure orders, dog control orders, graffiti removal orders, litter and noise abatement orders, housing injunctions and parenting orders. It's bureaucratic, it's expensive and ineffective, and it's got to end.
Then there was the Education Secretary, brainy Michael Gove, keen to get in on the act.
At the moment, many heads are prevented from dealing with their pupils. If the pupils run wild in a shopping mall, or behave antisocially in town centres. So we will change the rules to send one clear and consistent message. Heads will have the freedom they need to keep pupils in line, any time, any place, anywhere.
Michael Gove there, trying to give the conference a few crowd pleasers. Well, I'm here now with the Guardian's Home Affairs editor, Alan Travis, who has seen enough of these conferences to turn a man's hair grey. What did you make of it all today, Alan?
Well, law and order ain't what it used to be. When Ken Clark came to speak, finally, after a delayed education debate, half the party conference left the hall. Those that remained actually cheered Ken about three times. He had come carefully prepared with what you might call an iron glove and a velvet fist strategy. He'd come set to announce that he was going to make old lags lying in forced idleness in their cells work for their living, being paid the national minimum wage and then most of the money being given to their victims, whilst having to justify his policies of sending fewer people to prison. And he got away with it. He made them laugh. He also had to protest his support for George Osborne's economic strategy, and he did well. Theresa May's speech, I'm afraid, was also even fewer people in the hall to hear that.
Yes,
and
surprising.
Surprising, I think, maybe only a quarter full. And she went round the houses on her various policies on antisocial behaviour, immigration and crime. But unfortunately, her speech was sort of summed up by the fact that her main little announcement she had to make was that Baroness Helen Newlove, the widow of Gary Newlove, who was beaten to death by two drunken youths, who is going to be the new antisocial behaviour advisor, champion for this government, couldn't make the conference today because, unfortunately, she was busy elsewhere. And that seemed to sort of sum up Theresa May's speech, I'm afraid.
Alan Travis there. Well, we're nearing the end of the conference season, and I've caught up with Guardian columnist Jonathan Friedland. Johnny, you've been around all three party conferences this season. What's the theme? What are the interlocking themes you think you might have detected?
Well, the thing that has struck me and that I'm musing on more and more is the shadow being cast over all three of them by Tony Blair. And the thing that put it in my mind, it's just the way that people at all three constantly quote to me passages of the Blair book. You can't talk to anyone without them saying, well, you know, as Blair says in his book, and they quote it as if it's some kind of new holy canon that every politician must be aware of. And the fact that he says it makes it in some way unarguable, because he's the man, of course, who won three elections. And all the political operatives, junior ministers, ambitious MPs, they think that this is the man to learn from. You see it also in the rhetorical style of the three-party leaders. I think that is something that he's left his imprint on very firmly. There's just a kind of way of delivering a speech that was changed by Tony Blair, and the template is now set. And there's some more policy and substantive areas too. But I think Blair, even though he's been gone from the stage for 3.5 years, somehow seems to be hovering over all three.
Yet it's very ambiguous. I agree with you about the style. I thought that watching Nick Clegg, we'll see what David Cameron does tomorrow. But we know Cameron often sounds and looks like Blair on the campaign trail and elsewhere. But there's a sort of solid core of people at all the parties who despise Blair, the Labour Party in particular, paradoxically, since, as you say, he won them three elections. The Lib Dems are very ambiguous over civil liberty issues. I've just been listening to David Davis talking about the new Labour's record on civil liberties. He's very good on it too. And I don't dissent from your proposition, but it is odd that this hugely successful, still dominant politician, there's a lot of people who want to send him off to the International Criminal Court at The Hague, not to mention a number of other indictments.
I know. The paradox is definitely there. I think it must be similar to how people orientated themselves around Margaret Thatcher after she was gone. Even people who had made their careers hating her, nevertheless, she was the point around which you measured yourself and everyone else. And that's what's happening here, I think. Even people who don't like Tony Blair will use him as a kind of weapon. So, for example, George Osborne yesterday in his speech to taunt Ed Miliband in his roll call of people who agree with him and the Tories on the deficit, said, Tony Blair. Now, on other things, he would use Tony Blair the other way as a negative to his audience. But it's love him or hate him, he's so central, it seems, that he can just be used as a point of reference any angle, any side of the argument. His place in the Labour imagination is in some ways the most fascinating, because he's their creature, if you like. Actually, he wasn't, but he led them, and they're the ones who have the most negative feelings. But even there, that warning he gave them, deviate by 1 millimetre from the new Labour project and you'll lose, even the people in the Ed Miliband camp seem to be spooked by that. That haunts them, the idea that the electoral sorcerer has given them this advice and that they might be violating it.
Well, we'll leave Ed Miliband to sort out his relationship with Tony Blair. Let's go back to the Tories for a moment. How have they been treating Ed Miliband or the Miliband brothers?
Well, they certainly like making play of the brothers' point. Again, Osborne's speech, he said Tony Blair and one of the Miliband brothers agrees with me, as if making that fraternal split. There are these posters everywhere around, guess who, pictures of Gordon Brown and then a blurry face in the background, and the blurry face turns out to be Ed Miliband.
He gets credited with an awful lot of policy decisions, yes, which I'm pretty damn sure he didn't make.
That's right. Suddenly he's the most powerful figure whose fingerprints are all over the entire new Labour period, whereas before he was just a lowly spad figure. So a special advisor figure. So that's something they're trying to make of. I think they're a bit, as everyone is, unsure yet what to make of him and how best to play him. So this feels like a first draft on
the official narrative is that the Labour Party made a terrible mistake.
Yes. And that they've taken a left turn, they've taken a lurch to the left, they've gone backwards, and they had somebody who would have been for them like Tony Blair if they'd have gone for David Miliband, and therefore potentially a threat to the Tories and a winner, and instead they've chosen a Kinnockite loser. Again, Blair is in that mix, and if David Miliband had won, I'm sure they'd have pointed out the differences between him and Tony Blair.
Slight interjection there. Michael Portillo wrote in the FT, I think, this week that they got the right one, but none of his new Labour friends will believe it. Secondly, David Davis on this fringe meeting in the freedom zone, as they call it, has just said to me, or indeed to a couple of other people as well, Ed Miliband has taken a step back to making Labour a respectable party on civil liberties again. It was a good moment.
This is one of the things I'm going to be seeing in the column. I think this idea of all three parties being in this play the David Davis place on civil liberties means a key signature area of Blairist policy, which was tough on crime, is in a way left vacant at the moment. That policy, which said, embodied by the ASBO and that approach, the respect agenda, has actually been that terrain that's currently empty, because the Lib Dems are obviously on the civil liberties side of that argument, so is Ed Miliband, so are the Tories under David Cameron. I wonder if somebody, perhaps probably Cameron, is going to spot that opening and move right into it.
It's not a spot which is left vacant for long, is it? Did you watch Ken Clark and Theresa May this morning?
I did, and I thought it was interesting, Ken Clark saying, I'm not a woolly-minded liberal. Somehow the phrase just felt amusing from this sort of woolly mammoth figure of the Tory party.
Except he's not a woolly-minded liberal. He assaulted every institution in the British state in the 80s. People forget that.
No, people do forget that. He was the bruiser in the Thatcher years, and a bruiser among bruisers. He was the man they sent in to break unions and to deal with some of the hardest policy
Make
areas.
The nurses cry.
That's right, and the ambulance drivers strike. Ken Clark was the point man. He really has got the scars on his back, much more than our friend Tony Blair, who always boasted, did. So I did see that, and I thought it was interesting. But again, the Theresa May appearance was striking for it not being the traditional law and order red meat fest. And I've read on our own thread on the Guardian website, somebody, I think Andrew Sparrow, writing, quoting a delegate saying the truth is Tory party faithful aren't as interested in that agenda as they once were. Education, health, schools and hospitals, that's what gets them going now. Now, I don't know if that is true, but if it is, it's a shift.
John, it's a shocking thing to admit, but Phil and I have been trying to find red meat Tories around the conference centre to complain about Clark and May. We couldn't find them.
It shows you that it could be there's a skew demographic in who comes to these conferences. We noted, some of us, that the Labour conference last week was David's conference. It was much more tilted to that new Labourish, Blairish position, perhaps, than the rest of the party, just in terms of who comes. And it may be that it's a more moderniser crowd here in Birmingham for the Tories.
Maybe. I'm bound to say we interviewed an elderly couple who looked as if they were on their last legs. Very charming. And they were moderate on law and order too. It's a baffling week. We'll have to look forward and see what light David Cameron shows on it tomorrow. Thank you. Well, that's all for today. Tomorrow's the last day of the conference season, and the Prime Minister will round it off with his keynote speech. So far as I'm aware, my colleagues have not yet been provided with pre-briefing details. I'll be there for the speech. Producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Michael White. Hope to see you tomorrow. Goodbye.